Everyone, it is day 9 of the latest unrest in Cairo and around Egypt, and many developments to tell you about. In a sense, we're talking this morning about a race against time between the forces, fragile forces of emerging democracy that could support the views and aspirations of all those people we've been seeing in the streets of Cairo versus the countervailing forces of chaos and instability that are affected by the economic deprivation in Cairo, the difficulty of delivering food and basic foodstuffs, and privileged classes that have aspirations of their own, including the maintenance of the status quo. Here to talk about all of that is Marina Ottaway, director of the Middle East Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace from Washington, D.C. Good morning, Marina.
Good morning.
But first, we go live to New York Times Beirut Bureau Chief Anthony Shadid on the ground in Cairo, where demonstrations that appear to have shifted in mood are taking place on the streets. Anthony, what's going on?
Well, you see still large crowds in Liberation Square, tens of thousands of people, as we've seen in past days, calling for the immediate resignation of President Hosni Mubarak. But we've seen a troubling turn of events this morning. Gangs or groups, let's say, apparently organized by President Hosni Mubarak's government, have begun infiltrating the square. They've been approaching the outskirts of the demonstration and getting inside the demonstration itself, chanting for Mr. Mubarak, and in some ways seeming to try to provoke a fight with the protesters. There may be a strategy at work here, and that is the government's effort to create some kind of chaos or some kind of uncertainty in which the military is forced to intervene to restore some calm.
Is there any sense in which the demonstrators are prepared for that and refuse to be provoked into that kind of a violent clash?
Hello?
Is there any sense that the demonstrators are aware of that idea, that the army may be looking for a pretext? Anthony Shadid, we've lost his signal there for a moment. Going to Marina Ottaway, director of the Middle East Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. What precedent is there in the Arab world or in Egypt, for that matter, for an orderly democratic reconstruction, creating institutions that can actually support all the aspirations of the demonstrators we've been watching for the last 9 days?
Well, there are no precedents because there are no there are no democratic countries in the Middle East. There has been a slow process of strengthening democracy in Turkey, but it was quite different. It did not have such a major clash, such a breaking point as we are seeing in Egypt today. So it is uncharted territory.
Well, Marina, I'm wondering what role other countries, whether they have democracies or not, as you say, will have in helping to sculpt what goes on in Egypt. We got this very candid warning for Mubarak coming from the Turkish prime minister. Turkey has tried to kind of take that leading role, and the Turkish prime minister said that the freedoms can no longer be postponed or ignored.
I don't think the Egyptian government is going to listen to any pressure coming from the outside at this point. I think there is a role for outsiders, including the United States, once the government has changed. That is, if Mubarak goes, then there is a period of reconstruction, there is a period of trying to design new institutions, and I think at that point support and advice from overseas can be helpful. I think at this point it's really a showdown between the president, the crowds, and the military standing in the middle.
And in the middle of that showdown, once again, New York Times Beirut Bureau Chief Anthony Shadid. Anthony, Arab governments and the Arab world saw what happened in Iraq after the U.S. invasion in 2003, and it emboldened some of those governments to say, hey, you don't want this kind of instability. Do you think that the Egyptian government is trying to provoke the same sorts of scenes that we saw in Baghdad to mobilize itself to actually crack down?
You know, although I don't think they're wanting to have the kind of looting and scenes of utter chaos that we had in Baghdad in 2003, I think to a lesser degree that is exactly the strategy of this government. It's a government that's trying to claim legitimacy through this often mentioned mantra of Arab leaders of security and stability. President Mubarak mentioned that phrase several times last night in his speech. And what I think we're seeing is, you know, somewhat, you know, a troubling campaign on the part of the government to perhaps infiltrate these protests, create these scenes of chaos, and justify the intervention of the military in trying to restore calm. Basically, right now, you have a part of the downtown of Cairo that's been, you know, as protesters would describe it, liberated. It is not in the hands of the government. And the government sees that as a very clear threat right now.
And what is the status of the Muhabarat, the police, the black-suited police who are so feared by the people? Is it mostly the army? There, Anthony, once again, having difficulty hearing. Yeah. Just an indication of the difficulties of functioning there in Tahrir Square just a day after the jubilance that we heard yesterday. Marina Ottaway, Celeste referred to Turkey, and I'm wondering if you can go back in history. After an extraordinary revolution in the 1920s, Turkey basically created from scratch a secular democratic set of institutions that has survived the test of time. Is that the task for Egypt right now?
Well, first of all, Turkey created a set of very authoritarian institutions at the beginning. Turkey did not become a democracy until well after World War II. And even in that period, for many, many years, it was a very limited democracy in the sense that every time things did not seem to go the way the military wanted them to go, the military intervened. Turkey has had a long history of military coup d'etat. It has evolved, and I think today Turkey is a democratic country, but it's not a process that can serve as an example for Egypt in the sense that it's a process that took half a century to unfold.
All right, that's Marina Ottaway, director of the Middle East Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Beirut Bureau Chief Anthony Shadid on the streets of Cairo, if you had to pick a democratic model in the region for Egypt to choose, would you choose Turkey? Would you choose Iran? Or would you choose the unfortunate situation in Tiananmen Square in 1989 for the people of Egypt?
You know, I think Egypt, most remarkably, is choosing its own model right now. I think what is sometimes missed in all the coverage of what's going on here is a sense of popular empowerment. And I think that popular empowerment may be one of the greatest legacies of these events that we're seeing here in Liberation Square. What government eventually emerges, I think, is less dramatic in some ways than a population in some ways. They're saying they are going to be citizens again, and they're going to have a say over the destiny of their country.
That's New York Times Beirut Bureau Chief Anthony Shadid reporting on the models for democracy that Egypt is apparently creating right there in Tahrir Square, even as the mood between pro-Mubarak demonstrators and pro-democracy demonstrators appears to change, a slightly more aggressive situation on the streets as the forces of democracy are racing the forces of instability in Egypt. The clock is ticking, and we're there. Stay with us.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.